Thomas Dobby joins us now, producer of Tim and Sid. Thomas, thanks for being on the show. And we got to start with Iceland. What a great Cinderella story. Such a tiny country, but a squandered opportunity for Argentina today at the same time.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for having me, by the way. But yeah, it was an amazing result. And, you know, you almost forget how great a story it is because they were at the Euros and they did so well that tournament, beat England, and everyone thought, oh, this Iceland. But then just to qualify again for this tournament with a population of basically the size of Hamilton is incredible. And then to play Argentina in the first game and to hold them, get a point. I mean, in the Euros, they started their campaign with a 1-1 draw against Portugal and Ronaldo. And now very similar, 1-1 draw against a huge country in Argentina and Messi. So, you know, the parallels are there. So maybe they have another run in them for sure.
Well, you never know. It's much tougher. Well, it's always toughest at the World Cup. But yes, that 2016 Euro run was exciting. What works for them, Thomas? What's the key to success? How do they pull this off?
You know, it seems old-fashioned, but they have that kind of brute strength, and they're a very together team. You can tell that they're playing for each other, and it's almost kind of an underrated thing nowadays in the modern game. I mean, these players play so little together. There's so much little time for the coaches to kind of get these guys ready together, and, you know, sometimes those bigger countries and those bigger stars, they come together, and they all kind of, you know, have their own thing going for them. And they're such big stars where they play. But this team, you know, that they're, you know, they don't have that. Gylfi Sigurdsson's a pretty big player. He plays for Everton. He's been in the Premier League. But these guys really are together. And I feel like that, you know, you see that in their performance. And the country is so united behind them. I think that it does so much for them when they go out there and play on the day.
Well, that's very, very likely the case. And it is exciting the way they have been able to do it, both at Euro 2016 and in this World Cup. Still early, but what a great start for them. How about Argentina? Messi with the big thing. Should they still be expected to move on through the group? Because like I said, that's a disappointing result for them.
Yeah, it's a really tough result. And the big thing for them is now they play Croatia on Thursday in their second game. You look at that and you think, you know, if they don't get 3 points from that, all of a sudden you're in huge trouble of even getting through the group. It's it wasn't an easy group and it was drawn. Nigeria is the other team that they're going to have to face. And, you know, it was tough on paper. And this one, they really kind of needed 3 points. And the pressure, that the biggest thing for them is the pressure on that team from home. I mean, they went back home after the 2014 World Cup. They lost in the final. They did way better than expected. And they went home and they were labeled losers. They were labeled failures. And, you know, the pressure on this team to deliver, it's basically come back with that trophy or bust. So you know that that's weighing on their shoulders. And you could feel it out there today. You could see it in their faces. You could see it, Messi's penalty, obviously. And that's the biggest thing for them. Can they handle that pressure? I mean, this is a nation that expects. It's much like Brazil in that way, where they expect if you're not going to win the trophy, then, you know, you haven't done us proud. So I feel like that weight of expectation might be their downfall.
It will be a crucial game, too, for them after a 1-1 draw with Iceland today, without question. Thomas Dobie is with us, producer of Tim and Sid. I'm Roger Lajoie. World Cup day three, really, after Russia opened it with the 5-0 win over Saudi Arabia. Call that day one today, and we'll look forward to tomorrow's games as well. But let's talk about the other games that went on. There's no question a lot of people have France in their World Cup pools to win this thing, and one of the traditional powers, and right at the top in the odds makers of a choice to win. They got the win against Australia, but barely. I guess a win is a win at the World Cup, but talk about Les Bleus, and maybe kind of a shakier start than them, than some people were expecting.
Yeah, it was a slow start. It was funny. It was, you know, here on the East Coast of Canada, it's a, you know, an early morning start, and they looked pretty foggy out there, and, you know, it was, the big talking point of that match was VAR, and the first time that it was used to reverse a decision, Antoine Griezmann got a penalty out of it, and, you know, that was kind of the massive talking point. And then Australia answered back 3 minutes later, and France looked like they were going to kind of stumble, get a point. Again, another tricky group with Peru and Denmark in there, that this was a vital 3 points. And, you know, even the winning goal, it was an inch over the line. And you talk about technology, VAR, and we're just kind of accustomed to goal line technology now, that nobody thought that was in, but you couldn't even tell. And they didn't celebrate at all. And then all of a sudden the ref hears it and they celebrate and they have a winner 8 minutes to go. It was very anticlimactic in a way, and very much just get the job done, get the 3 points. Happy about that. But the performance was left a lot to be desired. So they have to be a lot better in their next game, that's for sure.
Well, no doubt about it if they want to win the thing, but we'll see. I guess another factor too, you know, you talked about Iceland, their team unity, their strength. They're all in it for together. There had been some scuttlebutt and some people. I did a couple of World Cup previews that suggested maybe, you know, France has a few team chemistry problems, and if things don't go well for them, it could implode a little bit. I'm not prepared to say that after one game, but is that something to watch for maybe, especially if, you know, things get a little tight here, even moving out of their group?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we've seen it in the past. We saw it in 2010 really, really badly in South Africa, where that team completely folded and didn't get out of the group. Patrice Evra involved in that. And, you know, Paul Pogba, there's a lot of issues. You know, a lot of people have issues with his character, and he's a very expensive player, a very expensive transfer, Man United. Kind of been let down in that regard. So, you know, you hear whispers and you hear things, and the Griezmann announcement saying that he's going to stay at Atletico Madrid, you know, 2 days before their first game, a day before the World Cup started, was, you know, really unsettling for some people and the French journalists. So again, there, you know, there's whispers of things, but you hope that they can put it aside. And again, the weight of expectation in that country is massive, not as much as Argentina, but I think that, you know, those players will be feeling that as well. So it all comes down to being able to put that aside and perform on the field. And again, today, not the best performance, but 3 points, it puts them in a good spot against, with Peru and Denmark coming up, they should be able to win that group and have a favorable draw in the next round.
Well, that's what they need to do. Speaking of Denmark, they beat Peru 1-0. Would the Danes be the toughest challenge for France? Did you expect them to go through?
Yeah, you'd think so. Peru were extremely unfortunate to not get anything from today's game. I mean, they had a penalty that they skied over the bar. They pressed and had tons of chances to equalize. I mean, they'll feel hard done by they didn't get a point, if not win that game. So, you know, Denmark weren't overly impressive. I think that France will take some heart from seeing that performance. And I think France will comfortably be able to win the group now with those two looming. But Peru, it's, you know, France up next. And all of a sudden, you played great today. You lost 1-0. First time in the World Cup in 32 years, I believe it is. And the country is so behind them. So much support there. And a heartbreaking loss today. Now you play France next. And again, if you don't get something from that game, your tournament's over, and just like that. So, you know, it's the nature of the World Cup, but that group is going to be competitive, and France, you know, have to work hard enough, but they should be able to get through there.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt that you get in an 0-2 hole at the World Cup. It's one step out the door. We'll see indeed. Denmark winning 1-0. Finally, also today, Croatia beat Nigeria 2-0. A lot of the previews I did were analysts were complimentary towards Croatia, Thomas, but there's still a bit of a divided school on just how good a team this is. How good do you think they are, and what do you think of their performance today?
I thought they were absolutely terrific today, and there is a lot of hype about this team. I mean, they are kind of the dark horse pick, if you can call them that. And, you know, with Argentina not being a complete package, a lot of people think Croatia, you know, they can win that group. And that means, you know, you can then avoid France in the crossover, which would be massive. I really like this Croatia team. Again, there's rumblings of issues within that squad. And, you know, Modric has had some issues. And the whole team runs through Luka Modric of Real Madrid. And he was great today and converted a penalty. I think this team is really strong. I think that they have a chance to do a lot of damage. It might be their best team since 98, and they made the semifinals back then. So I think they have potentially, I don't know if they can go that deep, but I think that they have a lot of the right tools, and their midfield is strong. And if they can play as a unit, which they did today, and they're pretty dominant in that, I think they've been one of the most impressive in the first game. I think they can go a long way.
Thomas Dobie with us from Tim and Sid. I'm Roger Lejoie. As we talk about the World Cup, as we have 8 results in the books and 3 games coming up tomorrow. And let's talk about the games coming up tomorrow. And they feature some of the world's heavyweights, starting with Germany, of course, the holders, taking on Mexico. And we know the pressure that the Germans are under all the time. Anytime their expectation is to win. But what do you expect from them this time around, Thomas? Because not too many people are even suggesting that Germany will not be deep, deep into this tournament and perhaps with a chance to repeat. Do you feel they're that strong? And what kind of a test is Mexico in game one?
Yeah, I mean, Germany, every time they go to a major tournament, they're a threat. And this is certainly no different. I mean, you look at the depth of their squad and the fact that they can leave Leroy Sané at home, not even take him by choice. And that is a player that many think can be a top 10 player in the world soon and is already getting close to that. I mean, they have so much depth. It's like, reminds me of Canada at a major hockey tournament. You could take three full teams to challenge for the tournament. That's how deep Germany are. So the biggest thing for them is finding the right chemistry, but they've been able to do it in the past. And, you know, this team is absolutely formidable. Mexico, a bit of a, you know, not their greatest team. I think they've lost in the round of 16, five straight World Cups. So, you know, they kind of always are good enough to get through, but not do much more than that. And, you know, it's a tricky group as well with Sweden and South Korea. So I think Germany will win this group going away. And then second place, I think Mexico and Sweden will compete for it. It should be pretty open for that second spot, actually.
Will be fun. Brazil, of course, same thing. A heartbreak against Germany. Heartbreak's probably the wrong word to use. If it was 2-1, it's heartbreak. 7-1 is not heartbreak. It's humiliation.
Yeah, it broke the hearts of the country. That's
it
for sure.
Pretty much did. It was a horrible performance in their own home country, of course, and chance of revenge. Now, it's a long way to get back to the semifinal and final again for Brazil, but the expectations there is they go through. They open up against Switzerland. How do you compare Brazil's chances to Germany's?
I love Brazil this time around. That's actually my two finalists. I have Brazil and Germany facing off, and a bit of revenge for Brazil for 2014 and beating them this time around. I think this is a complete team. They've really refreshed and reinvigorated themselves over the last 4 years. You have that kind of loss at home and you think, what can that do? But this is Brazil, and they always are going to have the players. And the way that they've kind of built off of that and built towards this World Cup, and you know, Neymar's injury was a big scare, but he looks back very ready, fit, healthy, and the way he looked in the last pre-tournament game or two, and pair that with Gabriel Jesus and the way Coutinho's playing. I mean, this team is stacked, and it's one of those classic, thrilling, fun Brazilian teams. So I think that if you're going to be able to watch one game tomorrow or one game at a time, always try to watch these Brazil games, because they are that classic Samba kind of Brazil that you're not going to be able to take your eye off it. So definitely make time for them.
That'll be fun indeed. And the Germany and Mexico, 11 a.m. Eastern time. Brazil and Switzerland, 2 o'clock. And the early game features, well, at least early for us here at this part of the world, Costa Rica against Serbia. Like Croatia, Serbia in the minds and in the shows I did, Thomas, kind of a dark horse pick as well, and a dangerous team in the minds of a lot of people. What do you expect from them?
Yeah, that tomorrow's game, the 8 a.m. is going to be fascinating, actually. I think I have basically a coffee drip to my veins for the next month or so, because I'm up at the crack of dawn to watch them. But, it should be a really telling game. And it's a game that, you know, when you're in a group with Brazil, you have to kind of look to win those other games. It reminds me of that Peru-Denmark game today. I was thinking all along, like, the team that loses this, ultimately Peru, is in trouble, because, you know, France already have 3 points. And, you know, you start to worry about how you can possibly get out of that group. And that game tomorrow morning, I mean, you get there, you get 10, 15 minutes in, you start to think, we really have to win this game. I mean, Costa Rica, Serbia, if somebody loses that game and then you still have Brazil to play, all of a sudden you're thinking, our chances are slim to none. So it makes it immediately, first game, this is incredibly important, our chances to advance. So that alone should make it a great game, and knowing that both teams are kind of going to go for it. And Costa Rica, of course, made the quarterfinals last tournament, expected to do nothing and lost on penalties in the Netherlands. So, you know, they're kind of an outfit that could surprise again. So I could see both of these teams potentially going through behind Brazil. But if someone loses tomorrow, you're almost looking at packing your bags, unless you can get something against Brazil. So you're basically packing your bags.
Well, that's the big thing, isn't it, Thomas? Is like, you got to get a result, you know, and that's where the pressure comes in. I mean, and yes, I mean, you tie back to Iceland, Argentina today. It's a missed opportunity for Argentina, maybe for Iceland too. Look, the teams played to a 1-1 tie, obviously, but at least it's something. It keeps you alive and takes off that pressure of having a must-win game 2 games into the tournament.
Yeah, I mean, the must-wins come thick and fast, and again, it's always so interesting to me. I'm a bit of a nerd with it, but it's like, who's going to play who first? And, you know, how does the schedule line up? Because it really is important for who you get to play first. I'm an England supporter, unabashed, and for me, I was like, the draw came out, and I thought, you know, good that they can play Belgium third, because you get to play Tunisia first, and then you play Panama, and you should, being the operative, beat those teams. And then the pressure in the Belgium game should be much less because it's just, oh, to win the group or not. Again, that's all if things go right. But at least you don't have that, you know, big test right away where, oh, geez, if we lose this game, now all of a sudden you get in your head, you start thinking. So really how the matches line up and who you play is a massive factor that kind of gets buried sometimes in tournaments. And I think that when you're in a group with a huge team and you're, you know, not that massive team, you kind of hope that it lines up the way that it works out for you to have a chance to pick up points before you face them.
Thomas Dobie is with us from Tim and Sid. I'm Roger Lajoie. Your thoughts on the first day and a half, because Russia and Saudi Arabia was the lone game. The Russians certainly very impressive on their home pitch, and Portugal and Spain was just an all-time classic. What an entertaining 3-3 tie that was. But end of the day, as we discussed, well, we'll stick with Portugal and Spain and then maybe follow up with Russia, Thomas. But Portugal and Spain both have that point, so they're not facing must-win games. But boy, that group's going to get tricky now.
Yeah, I mean, the thing for them, again, it's like it lines up. You play first, and I think they're both relatively happy with a point because then you get Morocco and Iran, and, you know, not to discredit either of those teams. Iran won on a 95th-minute own goal, but Morocco is probably the better team. But those Spain and Portugal feel that they should both win both those games. So I think they'll feel comfortable. But, you know, the two talking points already in the World Cup, and we're, you know, 2.5 days in, there's the VAR system and how that's working, which we can get into. And the second thing is the Ronaldo versus Messi debate and how good a 24 hours that was for Ronaldo with his hat trick, that performance, the goal at that time in that way, and then Messi to have a pretty terrible performance, to be honest, with the missed penalty. And, you know, those two things have gone from zero to, you knew that the VAR system would be a huge talking point, and Ronaldo Messi always is, but just how big those two things have been, I feel like it's dominated everything around the tournament so far. And, you know, it makes for great chatter and it makes for great debate, whether it be, you know, as part of the games on Twitter, whatnot, but it's those two things that have dominated the landscape for sure.
Well, there's no question, Thomas, and to the Ronaldo Messi, to follow up on that, I mean, it depends on where what you thought heading into the tournament. Because you're right, on day one, it was a ridiculous advantage for Ronaldo. It couldn't have been worse for Messi, I don't think. And Ronaldo has the hat trick in a 3-3 game, so it was pretty amazing. Well, how about the VAR system? Give us your thoughts on it. They're trying to use technology, but what about it?
Yeah, I was very worried about the system going into the tournament. I mean, we've seen it in MLS, we've seen it in Serie A, we've seen it in Germany, in the FA Cup in England. But, you know, I just didn't think they were ready to do this at a World Cup. And so far, I mean, I've been incredibly frustrated watching the games just because the biggest thing for me is what you want is to have consistency. And today, in one slate of games, in four games, we saw things all over the map. I mean, the call in the France game to give the penalty about 2 minutes afterwards, and that's fine. And it looked like the right decision. I think it was a penalty. But the Argentina-Iceland game, there was a call with 80 minutes on the clock. It was 1-1. And an Argentinian player, Pavon, got tripped up. And they didn't even look at it. And it was a clear-cut penalty. And the decision was made by the referee. Said no penalty. It didn't go and look at it. And if you're going to do this, you have to get the call right. You have to be consistent. And it still comes down to referee discretion. And if a referee wants to look at it or not. So ultimately, if it's poor refereeing, then it's poor refereeing. And today we saw one decision go one way and one decision not even looked at. So why are we doing this? If you're still not going to get the calls right, it's still going to be left to referee discretion. The whole system is completely out of whack. And you can't even celebrate a goal. I'm watching here as a neutral four games today. And the anticlimactic nature of every goal that goes in, every decision, I'm waiting until they look at the replays and decide if they're going to review it or not. It takes away the most telling aspect, the most intricate thing of a game. That celebration right when a goal goes in, it's gone. I honestly was frustrated today watching, thinking, I can't even have that emotion about the goal because I don't know if it's going to count yet.
Yeah,
well, I don't know if they're going to look at it or not.
I heard the same discussion earlier, Thomas, but what's the solution then? I mean, you know, I review every play, that's the thing. We saw it at first, and I recall the same kind of angst of hockey fans when instant replay was introduced in hockey, for that matter, when the tennis first introduced its system. I mean, That's the thing. It does take away, but if you want to get the call right every single time, well, I guess you better look at it. I guess the only thing is you maybe have to look at every call then.
Yeah, that's my point, is the Argentina one that wasn't looked at. I mean, if they're going to look at it, and they have a room full of referees that they keep showing who are wearing full ref uniforms, ridiculous, by the way, but they're sitting there watching it anyway, so they should be making the call and telling the referee what the decision is, but they're still letting that referee on the field go look at it when he wants to and then make the call with some chirps in his ear, but to not even look at that one for Argentina. If I was an Argentina fan, I'd be livid. So, the solution, again, for me, I'm old school, and for me to say I'd rather they not be that system at the World Cup is probably just getting used to it. And right now, I'm still getting used to it. I think a lot of people are, but the angst among, fans and the debate about it, it's taking over this World Cup. And honestly, I think that we're going to remember this World Cup. The biggest issue we're going to remember from it is this, the implementation of VAR. And I think that there's a lot of work to do, and if they want to do it, they have to do it right. And it feels like an experiment, and you're experimenting at the biggest
tournament the World Cup.
In the world.
Yeah.
Where you're experiencing. That's where I have an issue.
Yeah, it's hard to argue with that. Finally, quickly, Russia, your thoughts on their start? That was impressive first win.
Yeah, it was impressive. My thoughts are Vladimir Putin looked pretty happy up there. I just wonder if there was some, shady dealings going on to make sure they won that game, but I'm kidding, of
course.
Shady
deal with the Russians? Come on.
Yeah, you never think. Those shots that they kept showing it. Gianni Infantino and Putin and the Saudi prince. It was a little suspicious. But, no, that was a good win. But, Saudi Arabia, not a very, very highly regarded team. But, a good group. Again, speak of shady deals, a very good group that Russia has with Egypt, with Mo Salah, obviously. Still a shoulder issue. Looks like he's going to play next game. Uruguay's a nice team. They're a hard team, but Russia has every chance now to get through the group and would cross over with either Portugal or Spain. So, I think a round of 16 is kind of, they'll be happy with that as a host. One of the worst host nations we've seen at the World Cup, but we better get used to it because we're going to have Qatar next time around, and we had South Africa in 2010. So, it's kind of the nature of it if you want to put the hosts in the tournament, which hopefully they do for all three teams in 2026, expecting to. But, if Russia's getting in now, not being a very good team, if Qatar's getting in, Canada certainly, they better get in 2026, that's for sure.
Oh, I think that, especially with the tournament expanding and the number of teams, I think that was the whole point of the
It should be a slam dunk, but, it concerns me a little bit that of all, the coverage and everything, we haven't really heard a peep on that, and they still are saying it might be years away. So it's just a little disconcerting as a Canadian soccer fan to think, could we be the ones to get screwed and not get an automatic bid for the first time ever? But hopefully not.
Yeah, I would suspect all three countries will. But you're right. Until it's announced, we shall see. Thomas Dobie, producer of Tim and Sid, joining us to talk World Cup. Thomas, really enjoyed our conversation. Thanks so much for coming on tonight.
Yeah, me too. Anytime. Have a great night.